Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. U.S. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin says he will move heaven and earth to assist Ukraine. At the same time, the EU's foreign policy chief exclaims relations with Russia should be rebuilt. Talk about a united messaging problem. This is akin to saying, to save Ukraine, the West must destroy it. Cross-talking the Ukraine situation, I'm joined by my guest, Earl Rasmussen, in Washington. He is the executive vice president of the Eurasia Center. In Paris, we have John Lachlan. He is a university lecturer in history and political philosophy. And we have Alex Mikhailovich. He is a foreign affairs analyst and an RT contributor. All right, gentlemen, cross-talk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. John, let me go to you first in Paris. Liz Truss, who started her political career in child care, apparently, that was her portfolio, now as she's foreign secretary, she said the following in the last few days. The war in Ukraine is our war. It is everyone's war because Ukraine's victory is a strategic imperative for all of us. So we're at war. All of us are at war. And it's something, she said the quiet part out loud. Russia is at war with NATO. Russia is at war with the UK. British official saying that British weapons used by Ukrainians to kill Russians in Russia is okay. I wonder if Russia is going to reciprocate. John.
Well, that's what everyone, I suppose, is afraid of. But the fact that this is a war not between Russia and Ukraine, but between Russia and NATO, we've known this since the beginning of the conflict. Ukraine is just the theater of this conflict. The belligerents are NATO and Russia. How have we known this? Well, because President Zelensky told us. He told us, I think, 3 days into the war, 27th of February or something like that. He said he'd rung up all the NATO member states and asked them, could Ukraine join the alliance? And they all said no, but publicly the doors will remain open. In other words, the war is not about letting Ukraine make a sovereign choice about its future, as the NATO ideologue said at the time, because they're not prepared to admit it to the alliance. Instead, it is, as you've quoted Peter, Liz Truss saying, or Joe Biden the other week, saying that the goal was to weaken Russia. So that is the goal, and that's why the British Foreign Secretary says it's everybody's war, because what she means is that the West, London, Washington, the European allies, want this war in Ukraine in order to weaken Russia. That's what Biden said, to weaken Russia. That's why they were rearming Ukraine. That's why the United Kingdom signed a military cooperation agreement with Ukraine in summer 2021. That's why the United States signed one a few months later. The goal was to increase, to ratchet up the arming of Ukraine in order to pose a threat to Russia. And that is now the conflict that's being played out.
Okay, but Alex here, if I could still use this quote here, Ukraine's victory is a strategic imperative for all of us. What if Ukraine loses? As it will.
What if Ukraine? Well, look, first of all, let's remember, and this is the whole thing, we're talking about the beginning of this war. This war started in 2014, and the war started when NATO was involved in it in 2014. I covered this from Canada. JTF2, which are special forces, along with the SAS and U.S. special forces, were all on the ground, and could have been on the ground before 2014, helping what we know as the Azov Battalion and Pravi sector at the same time. So this is something that has been going on for an extended period of time. Now, win, lose, we're living in two parallel universes here, because what we're seeing in the West is something that we've never seen before, this unprecedented type of propaganda that I can only say has to have come from the COVID epidemic, because people are just as hyped about this as they have been in the past 2 years about what COVID was. It's unbelievable. Anywhere you look in the West, the flags are hanging, the commercials are on TV. We're seeing just blue and yellow absolutely everywhere. So from that perspective, this war has turned into something very different here. It's one of those things where everybody's patting each other on the back and saying, hey, I'm with this team. You know, you're either with us or against us.
Alex,
anybody who's criticized it, well, we're all Putin apologists.
Alex, but the same people that wear the pins on their lapels and the banners and all that, if you ask them, Do you know what the Donbass is? What do you think their reaction would be? They'd say, what's that? Okay.
Well, of course.
The whole point is that you've put it into context, and this propaganda intentionally has no context here. Earl, I mean, I want to stick with this winning and losing thing, because that's what we keep hearing about. What if the West lose? I mean, and that's in the cards here. I mean, Ukraine, as it stood on February 24th, will never return to that, ever. Okay. And when we hear the Foreign Secretary of the UK, Lloyd Austin, you know, they're all in here. I mean, this is going to end very, very badly, because there will be a winner and there will be a loser. And my hunch is, given that it's a neighboring country to Russia with overwhelming military force, it's going to be a disaster for NATO. And it is a disaster for NATO. Go ahead, Earl.
Well, Peter, you can, you know, this actually, this goes back even further before 2014. You can look at Wolfowitz Doctrine. You can look at the Grand Chessboard by Zbigniew Brzezinski. You can look at the RAND study in 2019. Ukraine is of strategic importance in order it doesn't really have a strategic importance for the U.S. for existence, but as far as weakening to Russia, it is. And so that's why it's focused here, and that's what this is all about, to weaken and contain Russia and to prevent them from resurging and to coming back up. What's going to happen if, obviously, militarily, it's not going to, unless there's an intervention, and then who knows what happens, Ukraine's going to lose this. And so what could happen is we could see a fragmentation of Ukraine.
Yep.
We could definitely see a pseudo new Cold War, potentially. Who knows how it would look with three-fourths of the world, or two-thirds to three-fourths of the world siding and keeping good relationships with Russia and China. And then we have the European group with some stragglers, Japan and U.S. and U.K., led by the U.S., obviously, in the other camp. So it's a definitely a dangerous direction, and it's dangerous from an economic. We're looking at a potential economic collapse in Europe, I think, if things go poorly.
Earl, I'm glad you brought that up, because let me go to John in Paris. What I find really interesting to watch is that there's this enormous attempt to isolate Russia. But the end result, the way I look at it, John, is that Europe is isolating itself.
Absolutely. On the question of winning and losing, in a way, the question is rather old-fashioned that you've put, Peter. In my view, what the West wants, what the United States wants, is for Russia to engage in a war of attrition. Mm-hmm. General Milley, the supreme commander of the head of the chief of staff of the American armies, said that before the war broke out. He said if Russia were to invade, the West would arm an insurrection in Ukraine. And this has been said by many commentators, that the American model is to have an Afghanistan for Ukraine. So the war could carry on as a war of attrition, a protracted period during which Russia would, for example, occupy a certain number of cities in Ukraine. It already occupies several as it is. And those cities would be subject to a long war of attrition, which would be very easy to wage, in the sense that obviously there are no physical borders between these cities and the rest of the country. It'd be easy for people to come in at night and, you know, blow things up or whatever. And a low-level war like that to try and maintain territories like Kherson or Mariupol or whatever, which Russia has already taken, would, in the American calculation, be very costly and dangerous for Russia. And I think that is the goal. Mm-hmm. In other words, I don't think there is a win or lose. We're not going to...
Well, I see your line of argument perfectly. Yeah, but Alex...
Someone's not going to blow the whistle and say, right, you know, 1-0 to NATO or 2-1 to Russia or whatever. It's going... The Ukraine is a trap, Russia. That is how the Americans see it.
Yep.
All outcomes are bad at the moment for Russia. Yes, they're very bad for Europe, and I think you're right, Europe has isolated itself, and Europe is very vulnerable economically. And Russia may well resist much better than Europe calculates. But it doesn't mean that the outcome is not bad for Russia. I think it is bad for Russia.
Oh,
I
absolutely agree with you. But, Alex, if I can go to you, but the worst outcome is for the Ukrainian people. That's the worst outcome here. And that's not in the Western calculation whatsoever. I mean, Lloyd Austin say, you know, the goal is to weaken Russia, as John said here. He didn't mention anything about Ukraine in that sentence. No, go ahead, Alex.
This is something that we, I think, as journalists and as analysts, that we've saw from the outside looking in. I mean, I've covered wars for a long time, and it's usually the United States of America invading somebody for weapons of mass destruction or some other obscure reason that doesn't really exist. There is no calculation, and they don't really care how many people are going to be killed on the ground. Ukraine, as much as I sympathize with the Ukrainian people and I feel for the Ukrainian people, I have a lot of Ukrainian friends. I grew up in a Ukrainian neighborhood in Toronto, Canada. I understand what they're going through. I was in the Balkans during the war there. I understand what's happening. But at the same time, Ukraine is not the point here. It's a war, a proxy war between the United States and Russia. What happened with Russia, now I believe that this was a big mistake. They got basically lured into a situation where you had Blinken constantly saying, Ukraine can do whatever it wants. Of course, if they want to join NATO, can join NATO. Ukraine wasn't close to joining NATO. And there's an election in 2024, if it's still happening, in Ukraine, where Zelensky probably would have been booted out, and Russia could have done the exact same thing that the United States did in 2014, and that was a coup. Done the exact same way, and it could have done this in a way that there would not be so much bloodshed. But at the same time, you have to remember, as much as Russia was baited in, who did the baiting and who doesn't care about lives? And it's seen over and over again. It's basically the UK and the US that are
behind. Yeah, but Alec, there's one thing that you could have mentioned and we'll never know is that in between time, the Donbass could have been invaded by Kiev, okay? And that was the impetus for us. History will judge, okay? But I'm not sure I agree with your timeline there, okay? We'll find out what the timeline was and why the decisions were made. All right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on the situation in Ukraine. Stay with our team. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing the situation in Ukraine. Okay, Earl, one of the interesting things that I find in watching this conflict here is Alex mentioned in the first part of the program that he's covered foreign wars around the world, most of them initiated, if not all of them, by the United States and its allies. But the impact of those wars on Western voters and Western consumers, I would say, was quite limited, okay? It wasn't a high-profile thing. Some of us have very strong interest in foreign policy, but the average voter doesn't. Now we have this situation here. We have supply chains, we have inflation, the fate of the dollar is at stake in many ways. People are not aware of it, but that's true. So this endeavor to support Ukraine that has of no strategic value whatsoever for Europe and the United States is beginning to cost something. Go ahead, Earl.
Well, I think, Peter, you got to remember that I think the whole initiative of this is, and all the other work too, is maintaining U.S. supremacy, dominance around the world. At any cost, essentially, but yeah, I do not. I would agree with you. I do not think that they fully thought this out. I think they thought there was going to be some ramifications, some blowback on sanctions and stuff. But I mean, they went all in with sanctions, all in. I mean, it ridiculous. This is draconian, and I think they also were thinking that they would get more people to support the sanctions, other than just the U.S. and Europe and their close allies. And that hasn't been the case. So I think this is a major, major threat to the global economy and the global financial system. We also, what's happened here, you hear them saying that Russia's using oil for whatever, and gas as blackmail. But what has the U.S. and their allies done as far as the global financial system and the dollar and the euro? Blackmail, exactly. And what they've done by using these is we basically have damaged themselves as far as credibility, as far as the whole global financial structure, I think, is really being challenged right now. And it's going to have, I think, Russia's going to have some tough times, but I think they'll get through it. Europe, I think, is going to have a very challenging time. And some blowback will come back to the U.S. too, and it'll definitely be affecting on the long term the supremacy of the dollar as a reserve currency. So I think it really hurts the European and the U.S. reputation globally. And it's as a result of that, they're not getting the actions that they thought they were going to. That's why they keep going after this. But I do not see it.
John, you know, I'm living in Moscow. I've been here for almost a quarter century right now, and I'm very well aware of the sanctions here. But life more or less just goes on. There's some inconveniences, yes, particularly when it comes to the financial system. But, you know, totally destroying the economy, you know, the ruble tumbled and then it was right back where it was before. As Earl has pointed out, the global south is not going to get involved in this. They see this as something well beyond their interests. These countries are looking out for their sovereignty and their citizens here, going along with the Europeans and the Americans. Are not in their interest here. So this endeavor, propaganda and using the financial system and trade is not panning out because it hasn't brought Russia to its knees. As I've been telling people, they've been preparing for this since 2014. They've been thinking about it a lot. Go ahead, John.
Well, in fact, when you go back in time, Russia, or before it, the Soviet Union, has been under sanctions, Western sanctions, since before I was born. You may remember Comecon, which was a body designed to restrict the export of technology to the Soviet Union. So the use of sanctions to try and weaken Russia is decades old. And I very much agree with what Alex just said about using the dollar and also, incidentally, the euro as instruments of blackmail, as Russia is accused of doing with gas. There's a big difference, however. Gas is a real thing. Oil is a real thing. The dollar and the euro are not real things. They're just bits of paper which serve another purpose, namely to buy whatever it is you want to buy. But some people are always going to want gas. They're always going to want oil. They're not necessarily going to always want dollars if they can instead buy their oil or gas in the Chinese currency or in the Russian currency or in the Indian currency or whatever you want. And one of the extraordinary things about this war is that I'm sure, like many people like me have asked, well, what exactly are Russia's war aims? You know, what is the end game from the Russian point of view? One of the consequences of this war has been to throw the pack of cards up into the air and see which way they settle. And we have seen the answer to that already with India and China and Brazil, these gigantic countries, these gigantic economies, of course, siding with Russia. As you said just now, the global south, including, by the way, the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, these economic powerhouses have not sided with the two sides of the Atlantic. And that is indeed, that indeed indicates that, as you asked me in a previous question, Europe is isolated.
You know, Alex, you know, is this issue of using energy as a form of blackmail. Well, I think we should kind of put it into perspective here. Over $300 billion of Russia's reserves have been frozen, if not stolen. You have NATO officials giving a nod for the Ukrainians to use NATO weaponry to hit targets inside of Russia. I mean, why shouldn't Russia just turn off the gas? I mean, it's a war. In what war can you any of you think of where, well, you know, we're going to be fighting each other, killing each other, but we're going to keep commerce going on? It doesn't happen. I don't think it's ever happened here. So, I mean, there should be a point in time and say, well, I mean, if you want to kill our people, then why should we sell you energy? Go ahead, Alex.
Well, absolutely. I mean, look, and it's exactly what you said. I mean, this goes... It's what the U.S. thought would be a win for them in the sense that Nord Stream 2 is not working. They thought that they basically shoved their oil into Europe exactly the way that they planned to. But it's a little bit more difficult than what they imagined to do in the first place. And as far as I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's still a pipeline that runs through Ukraine from Russia into Europe. So, I mean, we're in the middle of a war. This pipeline's still flowing. So from the very beginning, at least from my humble opinion, I was like, why doesn't Russia just turn that tap off?
Because Alex, Europe would be in shambles. Alex, I will even add a layer to that. Yes, that pipeline, it's the Yamal Druzhba pipeline, and they're shipping it through Ukraine, and they're paying the Ukrainian government transit fees as we speak. Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
And these are two countries that have been at war for how long now? And you have flights between Kiev and Moscow every day for how many years? So it's just one of those situations. I mean, and back to the sanctions, I just want to touch upon this. I was in Serbia and the former Yugoslavia during sanctions there. Some people would say I wrote the book on it when I was with a UN organization. Co-wrote a book, actually. But the fact of the matter is that sanctions do not work. Some of the best times of my life were under sanctions, where you grab a bottle of wine and guitar, the lights are off, and everybody had the best time of their lives. You still can get food. Serbia was prepared for it, and you can be sure that Russia's prepared for it.
Yes, but Earl, has the West prepared for it? That's the question here. And I don't think they have, and certainly the Europeans haven't. I mean, I've been watching media coverage of Germany hemming and hawing about what it's going to do. It can't really do very much. There's a choice. Turn off the lights and close the door, and the entire European economy will collapse, okay? But there's still these buffoons in the UK and the US forcing the Germans to do it. I mean, the Chancellor of Germany, I call him Sergeant Schultz, because that's exactly how he acts. Go ahead, Earl.
Well, yeah, absolutely, Peter. And this is going to have a... I don't think the West completely prepared for this. But I also think that a secondary intent of this not only was directed towards Russia, but I think also was directed towards Europe, because one of the things in all the documents is to prevent Europe from resurging and create and to prevent too close of business ties
with Russia,
maintain U.S. dominance.
Yeah, but Earl,
well.
I agree with you. But isn't it kind of a hollow victory? I mean, you want hegemony. You want to maintain your hegemony in Europe, but then Europe just becomes a poorhouse. I mean, how is that a victory in the long term? Let me throw that to John. Go ahead, John. You react to that.
Well, it's not a victory. It's called making a desert and calling it peace. But I think that the cutting off of gas is going to be the next escalation. It's already started with Poland and Bulgaria. The Europeans one minute say that they will pay in rubles and another minute say that they won't. And unless the escalation, which has been explicitly threatened by Vladimir Putin, notably against Britain, unless that escalation takes a military form, I don't know what exactly he means. Maybe he means some kind of... hypersonic strike on a British target. Unless he means that, the logical next step is indeed the escalation that you have mentioned, namely cutting off the gas supplies. Even if those gas supplies were only cut off for, let's say, a week, the rise in gas prices would be so catastrophic and the effect on the markets would be so immense that that would itself strike a very severe blow, as of course would a permanent cutoff. So, yes, I think Europe is stuck in the middle. Europe has called the wrong, has backed the wrong horse on this, because Europe, as has happened so many times in the past, takes the flak for decisions which are taken in the United States.
Well, you know, Alex, let me finish it with you here. I mean, are Western publics prepared for the long term, long Cold War, even if it flares up with Russia? Are they prepared for that? 30 seconds.
Absolutely
go ahead.
Not. Absolutely not. Look, Europe right now is taking a hit. Look where the euro is right now. I mean, we saw this during 1999 during Kosovo. Europe was hit. The euro was hit. The UN was hit, ignored completely, as well as Russia. Three birds with one stone back then. This is exactly the same type of thing. And it makes you think why this could have been predicted. And this could be this paradigm shift everybody's talking about. Russia could be a useful step by actually shutting down oil. What is it? Are we going electric? What are we doing? There could be some mastermind up there who's completely off his rocker who thinks that this is a good thing.
It'll always be what could have been, gentlemen. That's all the time we have here. I want to thank my guests, and I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.